Hey, I'm Scott. Welcome to the show. How are you guys doing? All right, well, sorry to hear that. It'd be all right, man. All right. Yeah, it's my show, Scott Horton's show. Well, I couldn't sign into the chat room the last couple of days of last week because the CAPTCHA was trying to give me 10 pictures of pies and cakes, and I was supposed to choose all the pies or the cakes or something, but I could never see what it was I was supposed to choose, and I could never see the button for when I was done. And anyway, it finally quit asking me to do that. So now I'm back in the chat room. Looks like a whole bunch of people in here, too. Morning, guys. ScottHorton.org/chat. This is a plain old browser window. ScottHorton.org/chat. Or if you use XChat or ChatZilla or any of them kind of things. XChat. What did I say that again? Then it's IRC free node chat room. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Hashtag Scott Horton Show. Yeah. All right. So today on the show, Mike Swanson is going to be here to talk about the stock market bubble and how you can make money betting against it. He's got a brand new ebook out. It's free. You can get it for free for a limited time. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond by Michael Swanson, author of The War State and Wall Street Window. Supporter of this show. And you know, I get a lot of investment advice type things in my email. I'm on a lot of email lists, some bidden, some unbidden. And almost everything is, oh my God, look out because of the thing. And if you don't click this now, it's going to be too late. And then the thing will happen and it'll be horrible. And they're all written like that. Except for what I get from Mike Swanson. Wall Street Window is never like that. I mean, he could be warning you about serious consequences, but the language is never trying to manipulate your fear. He's just saying, hey guys, it looks like a problem. Here's what I'm doing about it. And you can hear the way the man speaks. He's just an honest guy. He's not here to buffalo you into some, you know, end times newsletter, financial end times newsletter. It's much more all above board and up and all that stuff, if you ask me. I read the Wall Street Window. I watch his YouTubes, and I try to keep up. I mean, I don't have any money, so I don't have any investments. So it's not really my business, so I don't pay that close of attention. I mean, it's the world I'm living in, so I'm trying to pay some attention to it, but I definitely think you guys at least should have the opportunity to hear what he has to say. All right. So that's that. And then I'm trying to get FFF guy. And I'm trying to get Julian Borger. I've never talked with Julian Borger today. Or ever before. Sorry, brain's not working yet. I drank a bunch of coffee, but it didn't work. I'm trying to get Adam Johnson. Sometimes Twitter friend, sometimes Twitter foe, almost always friend. He's at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. And yeah, he's a commie, but I don't care because he hates the empire and that's all that matters to me. And he's got a great one today at Fair mocking the pretension in the New York Times and at Vox and other places, that the only supporting that America ever did of rebels in Syria was by the DOD. And it was just, a few of them. And it was only recently in reaction to the rise of the Islamic State, not this was the project the last 4 years that led to the rise of the Islamic State in the first place, but somehow over there at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, they can remember the last 4 years. You know, with, I guess, I don't know. They must just keep really extensive archives and go back and reread stuff, right? Because nobody can remember with their simple organic tissue things that happened 4 whole years ago. like articles in the New York Times saying, hi, we're the New York Times. We're the official newspaper of record. And here's a story about the CIA shipping guns from Croatia to a bunch of Osama bin Laden loving head shopping lunatics in Syria. Why, here's the Sunday Times of London talking all about, guess what? CIA and Ambassador Stevens and all those guys working together to funnel jihadis and guns from Libya to Syria. Back when that got him killed, because Al-Qaeda are our enemies. Even if our government backs them, that doesn't mean that they love us. They'll take our guns and money, and then they'll kill our ambassador anyway. Because what did you think they were going to do? And anyway, everybody knows this. This isn't secret. I mean, you could call it clandestine, covert, whatever the hell, but everybody knows it. Phil Giraldi wrote an article in antiwar.com in December of 2011 saying Barack Obama just signed a new finding authorizing the CIA to support the rebels in Syria, to expand their support for the rebels in Syria. And then, as discussed with Eric Margolies on the show last week, the French, that is the French subsidiary of the American Empire, they had sent their spies and their special forces straight into Syria and were drumming up the rebellion, obviously on full cooperation with the American Empire at the time. It was in the summer of 2011, right away. It was reported in The Observer, which is just The Guardian on Sunday, that Prince Bandar is sending Mujahideen off to fight in Syria. And off they go. Anyway, everybody knows this. Everybody's known this all along. But somehow the New York Times wants to pretend it ain't so. So anyway, I'll see if I can get Adam Johnson on to talk about that. And then it's all right because I got tons of news to cover too on the show today. So even if we only have Mike Swanson and no other guests, I still got plenty to cover. Tomorrow, Landay is going to be on the show. He's got one about Obama talking with the Russians about what we're doing about Syria. Very interesting stuff. And Landay, I really like Landay, but he's really hawkish on Russia. But in this case, doesn't seem to have bled through too bad into this reporting. And, you know, I don't know. I think they're still trying to play both sides of the fence and haven't switched yet. But I guess we'll see. And then, oh, also, I was trying to get Steven Zunis on. It's been a long time since I've spoken with him.
Well, not that long, but
you guys might remember that back when the Libya war spread down into Mali in 2012 and 13, Steven Zunis was all over it because he already knew all about Mali. And so he was able to explain, you know, the previous government, the guy that was overthrown and this and that. And I emailed him. And he said he does not have expertise on that level about Burkina Faso, but he does know some about it, and he might be willing to talk about it. So I have a few articles here I've been reading and trying to keep up. There's huge protests going on, this military coup in West Africa. Mediators announced deal to end the coup crisis, but questions remain, says Reuters. And, you know, I have no idea whether this is actually, you know, important in terms of its relationship to other nations in Africa and long-term consequences and whatever. It may just be just another military coup and just another African state. Maybe there's a lot more to it that we need to know. I don't know. But at the very least, it's interesting to try to learn a little bit about it, if only because I honestly didn't know where the hell Burkina Faso was before this coup. If you'd asked me, there's no chance I could have found it on the map. So, that's not cool. Oh, and especially because, of course, the guy leading the coup was trained by the United States. That doesn't mean that the CIA put him up to it or anything necessarily. It could, though. I'm not discounting that. But it is an example, at the very least, of blowback and consequences from American Empire. These things happen. As Nick Turris, he'll tell you, it's going to keep on happening over there, too. Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? 1.5 bucks? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/Scott Horton Show. And thanks, y'all.
Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org.
Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, yesterday, Daniel and Adam, I'm sorry, I forget their last names, but Daniel and Adam interviewed me for what's called the Wake Up Call podcast. And you know me, I go on and on so long, they broke it into two. And basically the first part is, tell me about Iran's nuclear program. And then the second part is, yeah, but I heard these objections. So that's what it is. It's an interview of me about Iran and their nuclear program and what's the truth and what ain't. And both of these guys, Adam and Daniel, both, you can tell they're listeners to this show, readers of antiwar.com, very up on this stuff. And they even said after the show, if I hadn't brought up Israeli and CIA support for Jandala in eastern Iran, they were going to. They know their stuff. And so aside from the part where I probably answer way too long. Well, I'm used to doing these kind of monologues on the show. I really need to remember to try to shorten my answers when I'm being interviewed instead of just explaining every freaking thing I can think of to say, which is my typical kind of a deal. But anyway, check them out. Adam and Daniel at the Wake Up Call podcast. I don't have the URL in front of me, but I'm sure you can find it real quick. And then check this out, man. I got a new sponsor. It's NPV Engineering. Christopher Smith is his name. NVP Engineering. And the deal with that is this. Where's the link? Here it is. And I didn't say V in the middle, did I? It's NPV. NPV Engineering. Did I write it down? No, I got it right. NPV Engineering. Now, here's the deal. This does not really apply to most of you. The services that are offered by NPV Engineering are for those who are in industrial construction. Not just commercial construction, but industrial construction. People who are building factories. Contractors who are building factories. Who are doing, very high-tech and very in-depth type mechanical and chemical engineering, industrial construction projects, oil companies, manufacturing facilities, pressure vessels, piping and heating exchangers, chemical reactors. Okay, so some of you are contractors who really do high-end stuff. I know, I've gotten emails from you guys before. You do exist. Oh, me? I'm a contractor. I specialize in all this insane stuff you never heard of. I need you to do me a solid and patronize this great business. It's Christopher Smith at NPV Engineering, managing concepts to completion. And he is completely certified in chemical and mechanical engineering, and he can help you accomplish your project. For real. Now, I know that this is not exactly for everyone in the audience, but for those of you who this applies to, I sure would appreciate it if you would help, help support this show by supporting this show's sponsor. In this case, my brand new sponsor, NPV Engineering. You find them at npvengineering.com. And, you know, it's a guy who wants to help support the show. Wants to help drum up some business for himself, decided to give this a shot. How about you help me make it pay off for him? I mean, assuming you need these services, then why go to somebody else, right? He's helping to support your local anti-war radio show. Okay, cool. And Zunis is going to be on against Burkina Faso. I mean, against it. Regarding Burkina Faso and the coup there. Let's see. Great one, then. All right. So that's good. Oops. Yeah. You know what, man? I didn't write up a blog entry about today's show, did I? I sure should have. Today's show, Mike Swanson and Steven Zunis. I like Steven Zunis, man. He's a good dude. All right. Yeah, and you know, there's a military coup, so we gotta talk about it. And you know, I had that invite out to Julian Borger because I thought, you know, there are people who only hear the interviews, and there are people who, this is the only news they get, is listen to this show. And I was thinking, if I don't interview Julian Borger about that story about how Russia tried to regime change Assad for us as a compromise way back at the very beginning of 2012, then there are some people who just won't even hear that. If I don't interview him about it, they won't have heard the regular part of the show, this part of the show where I just do my own talking. So that being the case, I better get Borger on the show, man. Because what if after all of humanity is extinct and my radio show MP3 archives are the only actual surviving documentation of humanity's existence and that part of the story is left out? I just don't think I can abide that. Story must be told about everything that the U.S. government did to the poor people of Syria. Every chance for peace that they declined. That Barack Obama is the meanest son of a bitch. And you know, I know he's got this reputation as not being so, but yeah. How do you like that? I mean, man, oh man. Russia says, we'll get rid of Assad, okay? And they go, no. Go ahead and leave him. We'd rather have a war. Piss off Putin. And now Putin goes over there and says, well, forget you, man. I'm going to back Assad. I'm going to prop him up in the face of these Al-Qaeda terrorists. And what are you going to do about it? And now the Americans are crying that Russia wants to go and bomb the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. Oh, in fact, here's how we're going to finish this segment. Did you see Ryan Crocker, his letter to the New York Times, former ambassador to Syria and Iraq, dean of the Bush School of Government and Public Service at Texas A&M, for Christ's sake. This is the guy who helped George W. Bush hand 2/3 of Iraq over to the most Iranian-backed factions of all. The Dawah Party and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution and their army, the Badr Corps. And now here he is crying that America should not be helping Russia bombing Al-Qaeda and ISIS because that helps Assad. And we can't have that. We need a no-fly zone against Assad to shoot down his attacks against the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda because Assad is the enemy in Syria. And he says, this is Ryan Crocker pretending to be Obama writing a letter to Putin. He says, dear Vlad, tell Assad and his crew to get lost. Then we can talk, right? First agree to all of our demands. Then we'll begin negotiations. In other words, let's keep fighting. And he says, I'll find ways to ratchet up pressure on the IS, but not with you, because the image of the U.S. cooperating with one of Assad's biggest backers would associate us with Iran. Says Ryan Crocker, the Ayatollah's humble servant. You've got to be kidding me.
Hey, Al Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. And features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Our first guest today is our good friend Mike Swanson. He keeps WallStreetWindow.com. He's also the author of the great book and audiobook, The War State. The audiobook done by Listen and Think Audio. Available at Audible.com. All right, The War State, it's great. It's all about the rise of the military-industrial complex after World War II. The first three presidencies after World War II, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy. I think you'll really dig it. And then, but his real thing is making money and telling other people how they can make money too with their investments. And he's got this brand new book out. They're giving it away for free, on Kindle or for Kindle or your Kindle app for your phone or whatever it is at Amazon.com right now. It's called The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond. By Michael Swanson. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond. Go to Amazon.com and get it for free right now. And so welcome to the show, Michael. And how long is it free?
Oh, thanks for having me. Till tomorrow night, I guess midnight.
Okay.
I've got it set up just for people to download it for free. And my hope is people will download it. And if they like it, reviews for it, because people need to see reviews before they'll pay money for something.
Right. All right. Good deal. So yeah, man, go and check that out, guys. If you're interested at all, The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond. It's free through midnight tomorrow night. Mike Swan. So I started reading it. Obviously, I was not able to get all the way through it this morning. I wish I'd really started delving into it last night. It's really not that long, everybody. You know, you can probably sit down and get it read in one sitting, if you got a minute. The introduction, chapter one, chapter two, that's as far as I got. But so, yeah, let's just start with the introduction. What's so important about this book? You think this needs to be done? This needs to be in front of people's eyeballs right now?
Well, there's really two meanings in the title of the book, in the content of the book. I was listening to you. I realized it actually might be give people the wrong impression, the title of it. But the title, The Stock Market Bubble Bust 2015 and Beyond, I'm suggesting that the stock market has topped out back in July and is going into a bear market. That's what the meaning of the first couple words are. But and beyond, I'm not trying to suggest that it's the end of the world or it's going to fall forever. The and beyond part is really about the strategies, I think, to use to take advantage of it, the market falling, not just this year, but in the next couple years. Because when the stock market goes into a bear market, it causes lots of gyrations to take place. The volatility in the stock market increases. And frankly, we were already seeing that in the past couple weeks. The S&P 500 has made several moves of over 1% or down 1% in a single day. And to do it as many times as it has in the past couple weeks is actually very rare. And the only other time it's done that in a single month that many times is 2008 and 1929.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, it's just an example of the wild volatility in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in bear markets. You get these wild swings up and down. And when you have up days, the people in the market get hopeful and they think, well, maybe it's not really a bear market and things will go back up. And then you get the down days and, you know, the stuff drops anyway. So that's kind of the situation that the market's in now.
You know me, I know a little bit of Austrian economics and yet I don't have any money to invest. So I don't pay that close of attention to this. But I think I can really empathize with the common man trying to invest in the market. And, you know, there's no point in having a savings account. You lose out to inflation. So people are trying to invest if they didn't already lose everything they had back in 08 or whatever it is. But, you know, when there's a few down days in a row, a few up days in a row, for the average person, it's almost impossible to tell, well, what does this mean, right? Are we still going up, but we had a couple corrections, but we're still going up? Or, you know, now we've begun the descent down into the bear. Every time it jumps back up again, they're led to believe, oh, no, maybe we still are on their way back up. And I guess by the time it's clear that, oh, this is a bear, And it's going to keep going down for a while. It's too late. The Goldman already got out and left them holding the bag, that kind of thing. So how can you tell?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's a very good point, because what people are told in common, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but a lot of the people you see in the financial media, they'll say a bear market is when the stock market falls 20%, and a correction is anything less than that. So I'm afraid what's going to happen to people is they're going to hold, and then if the market falls 20%, then they'll go, oh, no, we're in a bear market, and then start selling in panic, you know, because they know bear markets can be bad. I mean, we saw the one in 2008 and 2000. But the key is what you just asked. How do you know the difference? And I think the answer is you have to have a real clear definition of what a bear market really is, beyond, well, it's just down 20% or I've lost a lot of money when it's obvious and too late. So that's really what the first couple chapters in the book are really about, is trying to explain to people how they know what a bear market is and what a bull market is. And there's a couple things that precede a new bear market. And we have had all of them actually take place. And one of them is stocks being overvalued. And if you look at the price people pay for earnings, the P/E ratio for market as a whole, that's been the case for some time, actually. The other thing is very bullish sentiment, because the people in the stock market start to convince themselves that the valuations don't matter, it'll just go up forever. And that's kind of happened too. But the third thing is really the most important, because the other two don't really enable you to time it. They're just kind of like warning signs. But the third thing is very significant, and that is at the very end of a bull market, you only get a couple stocks that are still going up, and most stocks actually go down. And that started to happen last year and got worse and worse basically every month until in July, when the stock market made a new high. The NASDAQ topped out on July the 20th. Half the stocks, the stock market, had already fallen over 10% or even more from their highs, and it was only about 20 stocks that were still driving the market higher at the very final week. And the same thing happened in October 2007 and towards the end of towards the first couple months of April 2000. Mm-hmm. So those things all happened, but the more important thing is, how do you define a bear market? Those are warning signs. And to me, and I have examples of this in the book, a bear market is a technical thing that happens when the prices fall below their 200-day moving average. And that's an indicator people use on stock charts. And what it basically is the average price over the past 200 days. And if something goes below that, for a period of time, what it means is that the prices are actually now trending down from their average over the past 200 days. And if something's trending down, and this is a long-term indicator, people use 5-day, 20-day, 50-day moving averages, but the 200-day is a long-term thing. And on charts, stock charts, what tends to happen is this indicator will become a resistance point. So right now, the S&P 500 is below 2,000, and that indicator is around 2,100, which is pretty far away for on a stock chart. So that's a sign to me that it's really a bear market, and it just started a couple months ago, or last month, when the market broke below that indicator.
All right, hold it right there. We'll be right back, y'all, with Mike Swanson from WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, y'all, I'm back. It's the Scott Horton Show here on the Liberty Radio Network. Hey, you people that listen to just the interviews, you do know the interviews come from this live show that I do from noon to two every weekday on the Liberty Radio Network, right? You can hear the whole show archives, too. All right. Right now I'm talking with Mike Swanson. He wrote the book, The War State. I hope you'll read it. It's great. Also, he does Wall Street Window and has a brand new book out. It's available on Amazon.com in Kindle format for free through midnight Tuesday night. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond. Get the Kindle edition for free at Amazon.com right now. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond by Michael Swanson. Okay, so Mike, we were talking about all the signals that you're seeing and the tea leaves and how you're reading them and why you think that rather than having a kind of minor correction, while the stock market's still, generally speaking, on the way up, like they all say on cable TV news, that actually the bear has begun. But so let me ask you about the news, because I saw, well, I didn't even read it, but I saw on the front of the newspaper, it said Janet Yellen and the Federal Reserve announced they're going to hold interest rates right where they're at, which is, what, negative 10 or something like that? So, So how can we be in a bear market when the Federal Reserve is still expanding bank credit and telling all the companies on the Fortune 500 list that here's a bunch of free money for you guys to have? That's not good enough to help keep the bubble going?
It doesn't look like it. And, you know, if you've listened to other people, like, let's say, Peter Schiff over the past couple of years, he's asserted that the stock market needs not simply low interest rates, but quantitative easing to go higher. And the past two times they ended the quantitative easing program, there was a correction, and then the Fed resumed it, and then the market continued higher. So they last ended their last quantitative easing program well over a year ago, and the market's been able to go up. But I think at this point, you know, it just needs it's running out of air. And without that fuel quantitative easing, it looks like it's topped out and going lower now.
So wait a minute. In other words, what you're saying is having low interest rates doesn't guarantee bank credit expansion necessarily. But what does guarantee the expansion of the money supply is the Federal Reserve buying bad debts up and introducing new money into circulation in order to do so. Am I reading you right?
Yeah, that's right. Now, the problem is, right, with the stock market and the Fed, which helps, I think, the argue the bearish case in the stock market, is that the Fed really can't just all of a sudden next week say, we're going to do more money printing and quantitative easing and make it all go back up, because they spent the past almost all year saying that we fixed everything, the economy's going to be back on track by the end of the year. And the phrase they've been using in the media is liftoff, meaning the economy is going to return to normal and they're therefore going to be able to raise interest rates. And even though they didn't raise rates last week, they still are kind of saying that's where we're headed to. It may just take an extra couple months. So they're kind of politically in a box where they can't just all of a sudden abandon what they've been saying without making people really panic and think something seriously wrong. And what that means to me is that it'll take the stock market going lower before that they would do a quantitative easing program or something else to try to stimulate things. Now, the problem I see with that, too, is even though it worked throughout this last bull market, there's no guarantee that it'll work again. And if you think about the last two bear markets from 2000, 2003, and 2007 to 2009, the Fed did all kinds of things to try to stimulate things, and it didn't stop the stock market from falling. So I believe once you're in a bear market, it's very difficult for the Fed to just stop it. Things just kind of have to run their course. And, you know, so I think it's a real mess that the Federal Reserve has gotten itself into.
All right. Well, so for all the thousandaires in the audience, who should they be betting against?
In what sense? Which market or?
Yeah. I mean, I think you say you're shorting all these guys right now, right?
Yeah. Well, there's two things about it. I'm shorting the stock market. I have for the past couple months. So I'm betting against it. I'm also the long gold stocks and gold and silver because I think they're going to go up at some point. Now, the second part of the book is about how to figure out when to buy stuff and what to buy. And that's just as important as getting out or not losing money because what most people do in a bear market is try to guess the bottom over and over again and chase the same stocks that were hot a couple months ago, when in reality, some of the best opportunities to buy come as a result of bear markets happening, but they're not in what everyone else is buying. So what you need to do is look for stuff that's holding up, even though the stock market's dropping, and then starts to turn up and go higher. So since the market peaked in July, gold and mining stocks, they haven't taken off, but they're holding up relative to the rest of the stock market. And if they continue to do that, at some point they'll just start to go up as the stock market drops. And what I'm trying to do is find other things that may do the same thing. It's still real early into this, so it's going to take time to find out what else is going to do that. But that actually, what I've just described, is actually one of the best ways to invest in anything and make money, is to find stuff that isn't falling when the stock market is, because typically what will happen is that stuff will take off and can go up for years. So in 2000, tobacco stocks and gold, too, did that. 2007, bonds did that in the summer and then did really well in the following year. And Bitcoin is something I really followed, but I actually wouldn't be surprised. I don't remember when it came into being, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was holding up too in 2008 and then just took off. Because typically what happens is something.
Well, I think it was actually created at the beginning of 2009, so it missed that last test.
But oh, it did?
Yeah,
oh,
its okay. Price is actually relatively low right now. If I had any money, I'd be buying them up. It's at like 230, something like that.
But yeah, that's an example. And I'm someone that I've never bought Bitcoin, and I really, just kind of like, oh, Bitcoin, it never struck me. And it was something I heard about after it went up for a very long time. But if it's something that holds up while the stock market drops for a couple months, then I would think it'll take off too. So that's what I'm looking at, is what kind of things will hold up when the stock market falls. And that's frankly a lot easier to make money doing that than is to bet against stocks. Because when you bet against a stock, you can only make, I'm looking to make like 30, 40, 50% or something. Whereas if you buy something and it starts to do a bull market, you can make quite a bit more than that over a couple years.
Yeah, well, there you go. But now, so let me ask you this. How come the crash isn't so severe as it was in 2008? It seems like a softer, slower slope here.
Well, I don't know. One thing about what's happened is if you look at 2008, the stock market topped out in 2007, and it fell into January, it bounced in the summer. The drop we all remember is the one in the fall, which was sort of like a crash, basically. In fact, I looked at the 1929 crash, and they're actually very similar, which is pretty amazing. The amount the stock market fell in 1929 is in 2008 almost identical. Now, what happened is in 29 the stock market fell for two more years, whereas 2008 it bottomed out in March. That's the real difference. But the thing about what's happening with the stock market now is it's really taken me by surprise, because in July I was actually, that's when I was, let me put you this way, for really over a year and a half, I was thinking, well, bear market is coming. You know, it's overvalued and people really bullish, but it's not here yet. Now, in July, I started to think differently and think it was actually here. And I started to bet against stocks at the end of the month. However, the market fell differently than I'd ever seen before at the start of a bear market in August when it fell for 4 days, about 10%. The Dow fell 1,000 points in the open one morning. And I've never seen a bear market start like that, that quickly off a high, and no one else has either. So in a way, we are kind of, I think, in an uncharted territory, and no one can really know how exactly it's going to play out. So I don't know. I just know it's a bear market, and just have to adjust accordingly. But, I mean, if it repeats what it did last month, it'll be something else.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll be watching from here, you know, through the cracks in my fingers over my eyes, you know. Thanks very much for coming back on the show, Mike. I always learn a lot.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
Really appreciate it. All right, y'all, wallstreetwindow.com. That's where you find Mike Swanson's investment advice through Tuesday night at midnight. You can get his new book, The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond, at Amazon.com for free. The Stock Market Bubble Bust of 2015 and Beyond Kindle Edition for free at Amazon.com. And then after that, it's going to be cheap enough. Buy it. All right. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our statist enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org.
You hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Well, our enemy, Microsoft, is screwing us again here. Old Steven Zunis, I was going to ask him questions, but then his symbol turned from green to yellow, and so much for that. This Skype, man, it's such a hassle. It's the ruiner of all live radio shows. Stupid Skype. I swear to God, he was green on there for 45 minutes before it was time for him to be interviewed, and then yellow. Oh, well. I'll tell you what, let's see if he can work it out. I'm going to introduce these stories here. 3 dead, at least 13 wounded in Burkina Faso coup violence. According to a doctor, that's from 3 days ago in the AFP. Boy, I'm not even going to try to say the name of the capital city here. Crying out loud, guys. Mediators announced deal to end Burkina coup crisis. Questions remain. This is in Reuters from yesterday. Regional mediators seeking to peacefully roll back a military coup in Burkina Faso said they negotiated a draft deal on Sunday to end the crisis, though they failed to secure the immediate restoration of civilian rule. Yeah, that's a pretty big though. The announcement by Senegal's President Macky Sall at a news conference came after a day fraught with tensions that began with an attack by pro-coup demonstrators and elite presidential guard soldiers on the hotel hosting the talks. It remained to be seen whether the unsigned agreement would be accepted by either the coup leaders, who took the interim president, prime minister, and several ministers hostage on Wednesday, or their opponents in a transitional government. A nighttime curfew remained in place Sunday night. The coup came weeks before an October 11th vote meant to mark a return to democracy after demonstrators toppled President Blaise Compaoré last year as he attempted to extend his 27-year rule. I wonder if that was a color-coded thing, man. The uprising became a beacon for democratic aspirations in Africa at a time when veteran rulers from Congo Republic, are seeking to scrap term limits. Under the proposal announced by Saul, who is the current chairman of the West African Bloc, ECOWAS, the date of the polls could be pushed back as late as November 22nd. In exchange for returning power to civilian transitional authority, former Kompore right-hand man General Gilbert Diendéré and his presidential guard would receive amnesty for acts committed during the putsch. President Michael Kafando would be restored as head of the transitional government, though the body's military members would be excluded, a move likely aimed at eliminating Prime Minister Isaac Zida, seen as Diendéré's chief opponent. The deal also called for the reinstatement of candidates with close links to Kompore who are excluded from running in the polls under a law passed by the transitional authorities. Yeah, he's still yellow on there, man. Their exclusion from the election, along with concerns that the transitional government was preparing to disband the presidential guard, were among the justifications given by Diendéré for staging the coup. A done deal? Saul, who spent 2 days in the capital on the mediation mission, said he planned to submit the proposal to a summit of heads of state in Nigeria on Tuesday. Before he announced the plan, François Hollande, president of Burkina Faso's former colonial master, France, issued a warning against rejecting the mediation. There are discussions taking place as we speak, and France backs the African mediations. I address a strong warning to those who would be tempted to oppose them, he said during a state visit to Morocco. However, there were immediate indications that the ECOWAS proposal might struggle to gain support among the rival Burkinabe groups. Burkinabe, I guess? I don't know what that means. In his own proposal submitted to mediators on Saturday and seen by Reuters, Diendéré put his own name forward to head a new post-coup transition. Oh, yeah? Many opposition and civil society members present as the various points of the ECOWAS-mediated deal were announced appeared visibly shocked by the document's content. It's a draft, that's all it is, said opposition politician Benoede Sankara. All right, well, that's a damn shame. All right, well, don't worry, everybody. We're going to get Stephen Zunis on the line here in a minute. One way or the other. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and stop reading this to you. Well, let me just get down to the lowest lowest part here. Who knows? I don't know, man. The junta has so far failed to gain nationwide traction for its coup. And outside the capital on Sunday, including the second largest city, people opposed to the putsch demonstrated without the interference of security forces. All right, anyway, I guess we'll leave it there until next segment. We'll see if we can get Stephen Zunis on the line to talk about this. Here's the interview I didn't get to today, but I sure wanted to. I would have settled for not just Jennifer Lynch, but anybody at the the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And I know they get Soros money now, or whatever. I'm sure they're not perfect on issues that I can't understand, but they do pretty much good work as far as I can tell. And anyway, this is called "With Little Fanfare, FBI Ramps Up Biometrics Programs Yet Again." And one of the major things is all of the records that they've kept, digitized faces, you know, pictures, photographs, laser scan fingerprints, and all the rest of these things that have been turned in voluntarily by people who are never suspects at all to the FBI just for background checks. Like, for example, to become a cab driver in Austin, Texas, you got to let them scan your fingers and you got to let them send in your stuff to the FBI to see if they got anything on you, or you can't, you know, for the background check, or you can't get a cab. Now, I would have just, I did assume this all along anyway, but here at least now they're officially admitting that they're integrating all of those records with the other database of actual suspects, never mind, you know, convicted, but people who at least have been arrested, and they're just going to put it all together. And basically the whole article is like that, just consolidating more and more databases. And enslaving us. I mean, it's the kind of thing where, have you seen Minority Report? And never mind the part about the pre-crime with the magical, you know, future seers or whatever. But just the part of the complete grid of control where your car runs on a government-controlled road. It's their car. It's not even your car. And, you know, basically you're just tracked everywhere you go. Cameras take pictures of your irises everywhere you go. And your permanent record is complete. There is nothing that is not known about you by the state at whatever time. That's very quickly the direction that we're heading. And I know most Americans are kind of reluctant, but we don't have a say in it. And I really like the way the EFF cites the case of Brandon Mayfield. You can hear my interview of him about this. He was an American attorney that the FBI hated because he was a good lawyer and he beat their ass a couple of times. And so they tried to frame him up on the Madrid bombing. And they said, oh, yeah, no, we got proof. We got fingerprints. And that was all they needed to arrest him. And they held him for 2 weeks before finally the Spanish police, who had tried quietly and privately, finally went public and said, those fingerprints don't match, damn it. And basically force the FBI to release this guy. But you can see how when you let the computer decide and it's nobody's fault, it's easy to subject more and more innocent people to its tender mercies when there's no one responsible.
Hey, all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. We do have Steven Zunis on the line. He's a professor of something and something. Welcome back. How are you doing, Steven?
Pretty good. I'm in Austria right now.
Oh, yeah?
Looking at the mountains while the sun is setting.
Cool.
Very nice.
All right, so I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, my man. It's my fault. What is your title at the University of what again?
I'm a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco.
I knew that. I just forgot it.
Yep. And I unfortunately have a few minutes right now, but we can just write what you want to talk about.
Yes, Burkina Faso. Now, you told me you're not an expert on this, but you knew so much about Mali back when the war broke out there in 2012 and 2013.
Okay.
I know that you're at least somewhat familiar with this, and you've been following the story of the coup d'etat there in Burkina Faso. So I guess just give us 10 minutes of everything you think is the most important for us to know about
it. Okay. Well, Burkina Faso is a landlocked country in West Africa, former French colony, used to be called Upper Volta. And it was one of those kind of classical, you know, neocolonial setups, you know, where they're independent in name only, where the French basically, you know, bribe their the folks who'd be friendly to their business interests and strategic interests, and a self-enriching elite, you know, would kind of rule things. And you know, people didn't really like that, so they only had one or two elections before they ended up staging a coup. But in 1983, a guy by the name of Thomas Sankara, who was one of the junior officers, was really fed up, and he staged kind of an internal coup and said, okay, we're going to do things right. First of all, we're going to change this colonial name, Upper Volta, and that's how they got their current name, Burkina Faso. But he did a lot more than that. He got everybody. He sold the fleet of Mercedes-Benzes that all these government officials had and replaced them with Toyota Compact. He started a program where, you know, the country's wealth would try to go to the people, you know, rather than the foreign corporations. And he called for a non-aligned foreign policy. He didn't want to get caught up in all the Cold War politics. And he was very popular. In fact, he all over Africa, people are looking at him as kind of a model of the new African leader to kind of, you know, get rid of the BS they've been having, you know, since independence. But he was murdered in a coup led by a guy named Blaise Compaoré, who ended up ruling the country until last year. He had ended up doing a series of staged elections and things like that. But the French, the Americans really liked him because, you know, he was friendly to their business interests. He was an ally in the so-called war on terror. But then what happened was the people got disgusted and they rose up last year. It was a largely nonviolent, I mean, there's some rioting and stuff, but it was mostly, you know, it was unarmed, you know, strikes, boycotts, street protests. Dozens of people got gunned down by the bloody presidential guard, which, you know, went, which was a U.S. organized and trained paramilitary force, you know, one that, you know, protected the president. It went by its French acronym, the RSP. And eventually, Compaoré was forced into exile. They got an interim government of the
Now let me stop you right there for a second, Stephen, and ask you: is there any indication that this was the NED, the USAID, whatever, American-backed, color-coded revolution-style thing? Sure, sounds like one.
Oh no, no, this is a very popular, genuine grassroots uprising. The U.S. was supporting the dictatorship. We were not supporting the.
Well, sometimes it's both, you know.
But you know, these guys, you know, this is for real. But they had a coalition government, planned to have elections in 2 weeks, where they would, you know, finally be able to elect a government, and the transition commission said basically, no allies of the dictatorship can run, and we should probably get rid of this RSP group. They're kind of sketchy given their history, but then the RSP ended up having a coup. This U.S.-trained elite force just, last week. They claimed themselves the provisional government. People, of course, went out in the streets and started protesting. And they started shooting people. There's still a lot of unrest going on. Now, there's no indication that the United States was behind the coup. But, in fact, officially, the Obama administration has condemned it. But it is as with Mali a couple of years ago, the people who did it were U.S. trained, were part of this militarization of Africa we've been seeing in recent years, where the United States is trying to set up this Africa command, you know, where and cooperate and train these African armed forces, essentially to fight in the war on terror. But it's kind of like, you know, the School of Americas, and, you know, when we train these various army officers
sure.
to fight the communists, they end up taking over these governments.
It turns out Omar the Chechen is actually Georgian and was trained by the Rangers, is now the military leader of the Islamic State.
Yeah, so, it's one of these things that, even though, again, I don't think it was the U.S. was behind the coup, it shows, again, this kind of short-sightedness that we end up, whether it be the fighting against communists or fighting against terrorists, we end up supporting these thugs that end up, taking over their countries and actually creating more radicals than they within the end of killing, because people don't want to be under a dictator, and they try to fight back. Now, so far, the good news is that the resistance, again, has largely been nonviolent. These people really are sincerely interested in democracy, but if they keep being oppressed like that, mm-hmm. they'll give an opening to the very radicals we supposedly oppose. So.
Now, Stephen, Reuters is reporting here that the president of Senegal has come up with this deal for a transition and basically to roll back the coup, some kind of power sharing, this kind of thing. Do you know anything about that?
The neighboring countries are definitely want to try to get some kind of compromise, but frankly, the Senegalese president's also very tight with French and neocolonial interests. I mean, I think what they want to do is maybe make some kind of coalition that may not be as brutal and dictatorial as some elements, but certainly not one that represents the masses either. Because what we've been seeing in Africa, that our stereotype of Africa is these tribal wars and all this kind of killing and corruption and all this kind of stuff, but people of Africa, want their freedom just as much as anybody else does. And, you have had, popular pro-democracy struggles going on there for some time. And, I have to leave now, unfortunately, but I just want to leave your listeners just the idea that, there's a lot of good things happening in Africa on the grassroots level we never hear about. And, they're manifesting themselves in grassroots sustainable economic development, and with empowering and educating women, trying to stop the abuses of state power, whether it be, pro-socialist governments, pro-capitalist governments. People power, and from below, and Burkina Faso looked like a bright spot, having ousted the 27-year-old dictatorship last year. And this coup, unfortunately, is a major setback. But they're despite all this, there is some signs of hope in Africa, and let's hope that these forces, not those of foreign intervention and corrupt local leaders, will be the ones that eventually come out on top.
All right, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I sure appreciate it, Stephen.
Sure thing. Take care.
Good to talk to you. All right, y'all. That's Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. I find his great archive of really good articles going back for much more than a decade at antiwar.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
Hey y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
All right, y'all. Welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And, hey, check it out. Make conversation, not war. That's what they're calling it. The Texas Millennial Institute is hosting a summit on foreign policy at Texas Christian University on October 10th. 2015. That is in Fort Worth, but I better make sure that that's in Fort Worth. Last I heard, that was in Fort Worth. Let me see. Texas Christian University. It's in Fort Worth. All right. Make conversation, not war, a summit on foreign policy at Texas Christian University on Saturday, October 10th, 2015. Saturday, October the 10th, 2015. And you can find out all about it at TexasMillennialInstitute.org. And the featured speakers are Angela Keaton from Antiwar.com, Ted Carpenter from the Cato Institute, Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation, and me from here. And I guess you could say I'm the editor of Antiwar.com. But, yeah. I don't know why I don't say that. It's not really my job, only kind of. I just do it. Check back for updates on speakers, sessions, and additional information as it comes. So, yeah, check it out. The Texas Millennial Institute, if you want to come out to Fort Worth on October the 10th, I'll be there giving a talk. All right, cool. Hadn't read that one yet. Oh, you know, John V. Walsh has written a piece that's running at Counterpunch today about Bernie Sanders. And it's much more in-depth. In fact, do I have it here somewhere? Let me see here. Maybe I tweeted it out earlier. Oh, I did tweet it out because I was trying to remember what the hell it was that I was reading. And I couldn't remember it. But I remembered that whoever it was had linked to Sam Husseini. So I asked him if he knew what it was, but then I remembered what it was. And this is it. Don't get burned again. The Sanders bribe. Now, I think a lot of people, they think of Sanders as, you know, what Bill O'Reilly would call the far left. And they think that part and parcel of being the far left is anti-imperialism, of course. Right? Except that, no, Bernie Sanders is horrible. He's a Democrat. Would you people stop believing in things and things? For crying out loud, grow up. Hey, guess what? I heard that there's a senator for me to believe in. No, I mean, does that even sound plausible on its face? Come on. And anyway, I don't know. There are people who really mean well, who are saying anybody but Hillary, man, we don't want Hillary and all of her wars. So it's gotta be Sanders. But then he doesn't talk about foreign policy. And then liberals who end up liking what he says about domestic policy, they don't want to hear what he has to say about foreign policy. They would, like him, prefer to just pretend that none of that matters or exists or is a subject of discussion. Even though that's part of the reason that they think that they prefer him to her. As everybody knows, Hillary Clinton will set the whole world on fire. You give her half a chance to. But, yeah, no, Bernie is not a good person and he's not anti-war. Pro-empire candidate. We have heard Sanders' defense of the Israeli atrocities and the bombing of Gaza, his call for Saudi to do even more killing against the Islamic State, his concern about Putin being, well, Putin and Russian. And thus Bernie is joining a cheering section that could root us right into nuclear war and oblivion. Here is from an interview of Bernie Sanders on the Bill O'Reilly Show. The entire world has got to stand up to Putin. We've got to deal with sanctions. We've got to deal with freezing assets. You've got to totally isolate them politically. You've got to totally isolate them economically. You freeze assets that the Russian government has all over the world. International corporations have huge investments in Russia. You could pull them out. Then, in an interview with National Public Radio, Sanders, the United States has got to work with our European allies and allies throughout the world to come up with an intelligent, rational approach to deal with Russia, to deal with ISIS, and deal with other national security threats. And then, from his own imagination, not anything in his ears, this idiot, David Greene, at NPR responds to that, sounds like you would intervene less. What? Again, the quote was, the United States has got to work with our European allies and allies throughout the world to come up with an intelligent, rational approach to deal with Russia, to deal with ISIS, and deal with other national security threats. NPR boy, well, sounds like you believe in peace. Sanders, no, I didn't say that. I mean, you've got to look at each particular case, obviously. Yeah. Don't you accuse him of planning on intervening less than Barack Obama. Sounds like he would intervene less than this president has. No, I didn't say that, replies Bernie Sanders. Obviously, writes John Walsh, there's not a shred of anti-interventionist or anti-imperial philosophy displayed here. Not even in terms of hedging a bet and saying, well, this much is true, but then, of course, that. Nope. And Walsh says he did oppose the first war in Iraq. He did support the Iran nuclear deal. He did refuse to go to Benjamin Netanyahu's speech before the joint session of Congress trying to ruin the deal. And so those are his pluses. But, you know, here's where we get to the most important part of this. And, you know, especially, you know, if you lean left and you want to believe in Bernie, this is what you got to understand about what's going on here. And I think this is probably true of Trump as well on the right side. But this is certainly what's going on here with Bernie Sanders, is he is just here as a foil to keep liberals and leftists and progressives inside the Democratic Party through the primary season so that then at the end he can endorse Hillary and deliver you all to her. Because, hey, got to stop Jeb. Got to stop Trump. Shrug. And that's what he's doing. That's clearly what's going on here. And more specifically, check out. It is not surprising, writes John Walsh at Counterpunch, that a few weeks back, E.J. Dionne, in his weekly cameo on National Public Radio, suggested that Bernie's campaign could help Hillary by keeping his opponent, ostensible opponent, could help Hillary by keeping attention focused on domestic issues. Unsaid is that such an approach keeps attention off the constant wars and intervention. And most important, Bernie soaks up support and energy that progressives might otherwise bestow on a genuine anti-interventionist candidate. In doing so, he protects Hillary. And who is a genuine anti-interventionist, even possible candidate on the left? Not Joe Biden. Iraq War Biden. Not by a long shot. There's Lincoln Chafee, but come on, Lincoln Chafee. So there you go, man. The bitter truth served up to leftists, and John V. Walsh is a leftist. For sure. Here he is at Counterpunch. Saying don't get burned again. No better.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, wrapping up for the day here. Appreciate y'all tuning in and hating the Empire, too. Tomorrow night, Eye on the Empire with me and Jeff Tucker on liberty.me. Liberty.me. It's like Facebook, but just for libertarians. It's great, really. I enjoy it. There's some great shows on there and some really great content on there, man. I think you guys should check it out. Liberty.me. Yeah, they pay me to say that, but also I mean it. So, whatever. It's all right. And it ain't much. Trust me. But I like doing the show. I got two shows on there now. I'm on every other Wednesday, which, strike that. I'm on every other Tuesday with Jeff Tucker and every Thursday with Jacob Hornberger. Eye on the Empire with Tucker and The Future of Freedom with Jacob Hornberger, which is a lot of fun too. So check out liberty.me. That's tomorrow night. Okay. Again, Lande is going to be on the show tomorrow to talk about, possibly Obama's going to join forces with Russia and Assad against Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. I don't know, man. You know, Lande thought that, well, of course, that's what they have to do now, once the Islamic State was declared back a year and a half ago, and that Washington, D.C., cognitive dissonance reigns supreme. But Israel says I'm supposed to hate Iran and Syria, Damascus, and Hezbollah more than Al-Qaeda. And so, hey, whatever Israel says, right, guys? Oh, and Russia, too. It's just like that time when they were the Soviet Union. And anyway, so Lande's got a big scoop, says things are changing over there. You know, Obama has long played reluctant. And the truth is, he could have just started carpet bombing Damascus. He just started a war against Libya. He could have just, you know, he has been somewhat reluctant. He is clearly compromised on a strategy, not of regime change against Assad, but of making sure that the war there continues. It is the Israeli strategy. In fact, let's find it again. Let's type together. Jody Rudoren, Syria, hemorrhaging. Let's see what we find here. Israel backs limited strikes against Syria. And the whole article is about this. But the quote for your use is, this is a playoff situation in which you need both teams to lose, but at least you don't want one to win. We'll settle for a tie, said Alon Pincus, a former Israeli consul general in New York. Let them both bleed. That is, the Al-Qaeda guys on one side, Assad and Hezbollah on the other. Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. That's the strategic thinking here. As long as this lingers, there's no real threat from Syria. Well, now that's just completely stupid. There never was a threat from Syria at all. Now there is. Because you turn two-thirds of the country over to a bunch of bin Ladenite lunatics. You know, Nasrallah controls Hezbollah. You know, they do what they're told. And they have parochial interests only. You know, They're completely reaping and sowing whirlwinds here when it comes to these jihadists, man. They're not going away. Called it years before this policy was implemented, too. You get rid of Assad, like in the clean break. Who do you get? The best case scenario is the Muslim Brotherhood in a civil war. They'd be the conservative Sunni Islamists. But everybody to the right of them is a hardcore radical suicide bombing lunatic, so. Told you. But anyway, so I'm not excusing anything Obama's done, but I'm just saying that's the context of when people go, oh, Obama hasn't done enough to get rid of Assad. Right. He's agreed with this Israeli strategy of just keep the war going. Again, all you have to do is type in Jody Rudoren. She's the New York Times bureau chief in Jerusalem. Jody Rudoren. Syria. Hemorrhaging. And you'll find it. And so that's the policy. That's been Obama's policy there. And that's what's created the current situation. And I have to go back to this. I'm going to try to get him back on the show. On the show for the first time. There's a lot of times I should interview Julian Borger. But anyway, man, this is huge. This is his biggest one in years here. The West, quote, ignored Russian offer in 2012 to have Syria's Assad step aside. Julian Borger in The Guardian from September the 15th, and it's a former Finnish president was the go-between, was the messenger, and Obama proverbially shot him. Oh, man, you think of the crisis in Syria since February, right? It's not just even the end of 2012, but man, the beginning of 2012. when, you know, casualties were still in the low thousands, really. Now millions and millions and millions of people have been forced from their homes. At least tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people have been killed by the American and Allied-backed Al-Qaeda suicide bombers on one side and the Assad-Baathist regime on the other. And it's all on Obama, man. But boy, is he Teflon. You thought Ronald Reagan was Teflon. Barack Obama can be as warmonger as he wants to be. And the right wing, they approve of the policy, so they don't want to give him credit for all the horrible stuff he does. And the liberals hate the policy, but they love their dear leader, and so they just ignore it. They just ignore it. And meanwhile, Obama has been as absolutely disastrous for the region as George W. Bush. You know, maybe to a lesser degree in any one place, but in a lot more places. And no, not because he pulled out of Iraq, but yes, because he backed Maliki instead of Alawi when Alawi actually won the election and the first legitimate chance to form a government in 2010. And Obama betrayed that system and stuck with Maliki, where Alawi, believe it or not, Saddam Hussein and CIA's former henchman, a Sunni Baathist, but who had, maybe he was a Shiite Baathist, but he had the trust of a lot of Sunnis, at least at one time. He was the last chance Iraq had of holding together as a nation state. And he wanted, it wouldn't have taken the American military to make that so. And by the way, the American military was still there in 2010. But instead they supported it. You know, it's not that they just wouldn't support Alawi. It was that they supported Maliki and kept him in there, made things that much worse. And then 10,000 times worse than that is they supported the regime change for Al-Qaeda in Libya and then in Syria as well. And, you know, story's been told quite a few places, quite a few books have been written about it, everything else. As soon as the revolution against Assad started, the Saudis especially hijacked it, but Al-Qaeda in Iraq said, blam, brand new lawless territory to expand into and to expand. And they say that, you know, Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State are bitter enemies, and they do fight. They have killed each other and called each other terrible, terrible names. But in fact, you look at the map, it sure looks to me anyway like Al-Qaeda mostly just serves as the shock troops for the Islamic State. Because after all, they're not trying to create a caliphate. They're still doing what Zawahiri says, which is just fight, fight, fight. So everywhere they go and take territory from the Syrian state, they give it to the Islamic State and then just continue moving forward. They're like IS's darky shield. You know? You guys go out there, that's a reference to the South Park movie. If you never saw it, don't call me a racist. It's just a metaphorical thing, man. And anyway, I don't know, man. You know, I almost run out of things to say about this. It's all just so completely frustrating and ridiculous. Russia says Syria's Assad is ready to share power. In other words, let's negotiate. And maybe, according to Russia, which, hey, man, you know, Assad is completely dependent on Russia, right? He is Putin's Maliki, and he serves more or less at the pleasure of the president of Russia. If the president of Russia says, you will step aside, it's going to be done. The same as he said, you will give up your chemical weapons in exchange for not being invaded. And here, just like in the beginning of 2012, Putin is saying, okay, man, let's do this. And instead, what's the American attitude? No. First, he has to step down. Then we'll negotiate. In other words, an offer he can't possibly accept, like the Rambouillet Accord. A pretended peace offer, an excuse to keep the war going. Let them all hemorrhage to death, like the Israelis say.